Now, Meet the Press, the prize-winning program produced by Lawrence E. Spivak. Ready for this spontaneous, unrehearsed conference are four of America's top reporters. Their questions, please remember, do not necessarily reflect their point of view. It is their way of getting a story for you. Here now is the moderator of Meet the Press, Mr. Ned Brooks.
And welcome once again to Meet the Press. Our guest is Mr. V.K. Krishnamenon, member of the Cabinet of India, and for several years the chief delegate to the United Nations. His country has been high in the news during the past few weeks on several fronts. He came here to New York to appear before the UN Disarmament Commission in support of the resolution opposing further tests of nuclear weapons. He is the first non-member to appear before that commission. Also in the news, India will participate this week in a conference which could have far-reaching importance. Prime Minister Nehru of India will join with President Tito of Yugoslavia and President Nasser of Egypt in forging a closer link among the three nations. And finally, India is being prominently mentioned in the debate here in this country over our policy toward nations which say they are not taking sides in the struggle between non-communists and the Russian bloc. Mr. Krishnamenon has played a leading role in United Nations affairs for the past several years. He was one of the leaders of India's fight for independence. When that fight was won, he took over the task of organizing the diplomatic representation in Europe, and he became India's first High Commissioner to the United Kingdom. He's a lawyer, he once was an editor in London, and he is a member of the upper house of the Indian Parliament. And now seated around the press table, ready to interview Mr. Krishnamenon, are Robert Ora Smith of the New York Times, Pauline Frederick of NBC News, William Hines of the Washington Evening Star, and Lawrence E. Spivak, our regular member of the Meet the Press panel. Now, Mr. Krishnamenon, if you're ready, we'll start the questions with Mr. Spivak.
Mr. Krishnamenon, it's widely felt in this country that there has been a deterioration of relationship between India and the United States. Do you think that? Are you satisfied with the state of American-Indian relations?
Mr. Brooke, before I answer this question, may I say I'm very happy to be with you and in this way to meet a lot of your people.
We're delighted to have you, sir.
And if all this assists in mutual understanding, that's something good we do. Now, Mr. Spivak asked me a question. He asked me the same last time. You know, if each time you see me, if you think it's further deteriorated, it must be pretty bad, isn't it? I don't think there is any deterioration in Indo-American relations as these policies get more defined and when they are put forward with sincerity and without submitting to pressures, the divisions will appear. If you mean by bad relations, trade relations, personal relations, cultural relations, human relations, no. I think that your ambassador, or I understand he's not going back, I'm very sorry to hear, is well thought of, well regarded in India. My prime minister was about to come here. Unfortunately, the president's state of health at that time, we thought we should not impose greater strains on him. So I would say that there is no deterioration, but we must each learn to think of and talk of each other as independent nations.
Well, Mr. Krishnamenon, you say I asked you that question last time. I think that's an indication of how persistent the questioning is in this country. Many of our people who have come back from India and have discussed this issue have felt the same. I mean, when Mr. Hoffman and Mr. Coles, for example, returned, and even the ambassador, there was a strong feeling that there has been a deterioration in the relationship between India and the United States. Now, you say you haven't seen that at all, culturally, economically, or any way you wish.
Not on our side. I can only speak for us. I can't speak for you. So far as we are concerned, we have nothing but friendly relations towards you. Equally, we are, to the best of our ability, we intend to think for ourselves and act for ourselves and behave towards you as independent people, respecting your judgment and hoping you respect ours.
Well, now, specifically, fear has been expressed in this country that if we should fail to give you more aid, that might push you into the Soviet bloc. Is that a fair question? Is there any danger of that, or is that something that just wouldn't or couldn't happen?
It's a fair question in as far as it reflects the subjective state of your mind. It is not a fair question in relation to our attitude. Now, the implication of that question is that such aid as has gone to us is a kind of tie. Our religions or our friendship has been canvassed, I don't use any stronger word, by that. But we have been insistent all along that any assistance received from any country cannot cannot have any strings, cannot tie us down to anything we don't want to do. I think the question of giving aid is part of your policies, your decisions, your judgments, your capacities, and to a certain extent, the talks and understandings that go on about it. I don't suppose it would make any difference. I haven't heard anything of that kind.
So that you do not think that if we fail to give you aid, that will worsen our relationships, or that if we give you aid, it will better our relationships?
If I may say so to you with great respect, I hope you won't ask that question in India, because that might please hurt some people, because the implication of it is that if you give aid, you can buy friendship.
Miss Frederick.
I don't say you mean that.
That is a question, Mr. Krishnamenon, yes, that is being raised here all the time, as you know.
This is not to be interpreted as a kind of supercilious indifference, but it simply is pointing out to you the facts of the case.
Now, Miss Frederick.
Mr. Krishnamenon, to pursue this line of thought a little further, your Prime Minister made a speech in Bonn, Germany last night, in which he is reported to have said that American policies could lead to atomic war, that our missionary attitude of trying to force nations like India to accept its policies was keeping, this attitude was keeping the world divided. Now, how are we trying to force India, nations like India, to accept our policies?
I may make two preliminary observations.
Yes.
First of all, I do not comment on what people say someone has said, because it usually comes from newspaper reports which need not necessarily be accurate or reported in their context.
Well, this was
secondly,
from the Associated Press. Isn't that reliable?
I didn't say it was not, but you are asking me a question for the record of what my Prime Minister said.
Yes.
Secondly, I think my Prime Minister's statements, if they're authentic, they must stand alone. Now, coming to the substance of this matter, what he is alleged to have said is that if they cultivate their missionary attitude, did you say?
Yes.
I doubt
of
very much whether you used
nations.
Those words. He has always said, it is better for nations to think for themselves, to develop for themselves. That is the essence of democratic and free life. And it does not indicate any unfriendliness towards your country. It simply says, it's an indication to the world that countries of Asia are awake, they are alive, they are as self-respecting as anybody else. And you can neither take them for granted nor coax them into anything.
Mr. Krishnamenon, I don't believe your Prime Minister said anything about the Soviet policies in his speech last night. Would this omission lead one to conclude that the Soviet Union does not try to influence you in any way, and therefore he has no criticism of their policy?
You see, there again, you cast this question in this way. In your mind, this is a juxtaposition. If anyone said anything good about America, it is against the Soviet Union. If anything good about the Soviet Union, it's against America. We don't think in that way. The context, I don't know what context he was speaking in. He must have been asked about that. And there is no need to go to West Germany to speak about Russia. West Germany is part of the Western system. Someone must have asked him a question. But on the substantive part of it, first of all, we did not receive any aid from the Soviet Union. Secondly, if any aid came from the Soviet Union by way of technical assistance to the United Nations or anything else, we would no more be conditioned by it than we would be conditioned by American aid. Not all the dollars that you spend on India would ever buy our allegiance. Our allegiance is bought by your respect for us and our respect for you.
One final word. Would you prefer to have American aid channeled through the UN?
Yes, all aid. Don't try to specialize in one thing. We have always said it's part of our policy, and increasingly the part of the policy of all countries. In fact, the only opposition last year was from the United Kingdom, from the United States. And I think they are gradually coming over to that view that it is best that all aid is channeled to the United Nations.
Mr. Hines.
Mr. Krishnamenon, the word that we use, neutralism, I believe is not preferred by your people. You prefer a word non-alignment. Now, with that in mind, in a speech in Manila on July 4th, Vice President Nixon said, "Toward the brand of neutralism that makes no moral distinction between the communist and the free world, we have no sympathy." Now, I'm not asking you to comment on what Vice President Nixon said. I'm merely asking you, does India make any moral distinction between the communist and the free world?
Now, you asked me 5 questions in one, haven't you?
I think not. I think I've asked you one.
Well, you know, there's not a bargain basement. One question at a time.
All right, one question. Does India make any moral distinction between the communist and the free world?
No, the first question was about the words. Now, we don't mind what words you use so long as we understand what you mean by it. Now, neutralism is an inept word because neutrality is the other side of belligerency. If we are neutrals, it means you are belligerents, and we don't think you are. And therefore, the word neutralism in peacetime has no value. Secondly, neutralism can mean a kind of vegetative existence, a kind of blandness, a kind of colorlessness. That is not our policy, non-positiveness. And that also is a mistake. What really it means is this, that our policies are not predetermined by the commitments of other powers, by being in one camp or the other. We have very often been on one side or on the other. Generally speaking, our background is a background of long history of the mixture of various civilizations, and our contacts with the Western world and the Russians are very good, and that's where it stays.
Well, does India make any moral distinction between the communist and the free world?
What do you mean by moral distinctions?
Do you think that our system of life is more right than theirs, or less right than theirs?
I think the starting point of this must be right. It is not our business to sit in judgment upon other nations. What we do is that you are entitled to lead your life, and I think the Russians are entitled to lead their life in the best of the way. You may say they are not leading it. Therefore, we follow the principle of each country having its own form of government, and if the people don't like it, someday they will overthrow it, and so on. We cannot sit in judgment on which form of government is better or worse.
You can sit in judgment on other nations, though. For instance, Pakistan, you certainly sit on in moral judgment on Pakistan in Ray Kashmir, don't you? Why
no.
can't you decide whether the no, United no, States or the Soviet
sit,
Union?
No, we did not sit in moral judgment over Pakistan. We sit in moral judgment over an action of aggression on our territory. When somebody invades us, we call him an invader. That is not sitting on moral judgment on the whole of that country.
Well, perhaps I can put it just in this way. Has the United States, as far as you know, ever performed an act of aggression against any other country?
I don't know.
Has the Soviet Union ever performed an act of aggression against
any? I'm not aware of any.
Never heard of any act of aggression by the Soviet Union against any other country?
No, I'm here to try and express opinions about India. If you're going to catechize me on the history of Europe, it depends upon which American history you read.
Mr. Smith.
I want to come back to this question of Pakistan, Mr. Krishnamenon. You said a moment ago that persons ought to be allowed to determine their own government,
right,
the one under which they live.
Yeah.
Now, we have on the record 9 proposals in the United Nations and its agencies for a plebiscite in Kashmir by Kashmiris. The Pakistanis have accepted all 9. The government of India has obstructed all 9. How do you reconcile that policy with what you believe to be self-determination? If self-determination is good for us, if it's good for you, if it's good for the Russians, why isn't it good for the Kashmiris? Why can't they have the government that they want?
Now that the question of the speech is over, may I answer? For all that is true is that you have said all these things, that your newspaper has printed these things. That do not make them facts. First of all, a fact which is only 4/10 or 9/10 of a fact is not a fact. You must take the whole of the thing. We came before the United Nations because Pakistan invaded Kashmir, which was part of India. Pakistan invaded India, and we came to the Security Council to ask the Security Council to use its good offices to have the invaders removed. And we accepted tentatively all methods of conciliation in order that the vacation of aggression may be accomplished peacefully. You are entirely in error in thinking that we committed ourselves to all these steps that you're speaking about. We said in the course of the discussion, if things can be peacefully accomplished, after certain stages are over, we are prepared to consider that. That was 9 years ago. Since then, there have been free elections in Kashmir. There's a parliament in Kashmir. There's an opposition in Kashmir. What is more, Pakistan on the other side, contrary to all agreements, have annexed part of the territory, have established their power which they are not entitled to do even under these tentative agreements. Where they've been told they can have local authorities. It's not part of their no right to occupy the territory. They went into military alliances with the United States, the United Kingdom, Iraq, and other countries, which brings the whole Cold War to our brink, and the balance of our forces are changed. Therefore, when you people speak about Kashmir, you should not penalize us for at any time for having tried to reach far for a compromise. Our initial charges before the initial complaint before the Security Council was, Our territory is invaded. Asked the enemy to withdraw. The enemy said we were not there. Until 6 months later, they were found by the United Nations. And nobody, and what is more, these are, you refer to the United Nations records. Why not refer to Owen Dixon's report, where he said the invasion of Kashmir by Pakistan is a gross violation of international law?
Mr. Spivak.
Mr. Krishnamenon, as I took your words down a minute ago, you said you won't sit in judgment on which country is better or which country is worse. Is that essentially correct?
In the abstract, that's the question, yes. I was asked. I would sit on judgment on a country. It affects me in action. For example, if Pakistan invaded me or somebody else did something wrong, then I have a right to sit in judgment on that action. We, for example, take Pakistan itself. We don't sit in judgment on Pakistan over as a whole. No. We don't criticize their constitution. We don't criticize their being an Islamic state or a non-Islamic state. We don't try to undo the partition. We don't touch the tender spots. We don't commit inroads in the territory.
But you do take a position on which nation is right or wrong in many affairs of the world, don't you?
Yes, in the context of world affairs. But you are asking me to pronounce a judgment upon the moral rights of individuals and nations, which I am not competent
to. No, but you have taken, India and you particularly, have in the UN taken a position on the rightness or the wrongness of a position. For example, you've taken a position on colonialism. You say that the French are wrong and the Algerians are right.
No, what you, did I say? Just a
no,
minute.
No, what, don't what, you what, say that?
No, no, to go, find out something. Don't say I said something without authority. What did I say?
You're the best authority for that.
I am the best authority, if you'll accept me. What I've always said was, when the French act in such a way as to impose the rule upon somebody else, that we consider wrong, and what is more, we insist not on their wrongness so much as the right of the other people to be free.
Yes, and you said that. Then you have taken a position between those
yes,
two.
Yes, but there's a very, very good distinction, very fine distinction, not a fine distinction, a sharp distinction between sitting ad hoc in judgment on a country and sitting in judgment on particular actions. We, for example, we're very friendly with France. If you disapproved of France, we would not be so.
That's right. No, but you take a position on a particular thing.
Naturally.
You said, for example, and I think Nero was said, and I believe you, that Cyprus ought to be independent. Is that correct?
We have said that all along.
Yes, and you believe that. Now,
yes.
My question is this. Why do you take a position, for example, on the rightness or wrongness in Algeria, but not, for example, on what the communists do in Poland, on Poland? You see, that leads to misunderstanding in this country. Why, for example, you take a position on the independence for Cyprus, but do not take a position on the independence of an issue I raised with you when you were on here last time, of the Baltic states. That leads to confusion in this country. Would you clarify that for us?
I'll tell you. I told you once before. Let's have something new. And now with regard to Poland. Poland happens to be a member of the United Nations. If she is not an independent country who has subscribed to the charter, capable of carrying her international obligations, she would not have been admitted to the United Nations. So far as we know, Poland is an independent country. We have good relations with them, and it would be very wrong for them to go and call us a colonial country. If their difficulty is Russia, or Russia has difficulties with them, until it comes to an international stage, if it ever does, they must look after themselves.
Ms. Frederick.
Mr. Krishnamenon, this past week you made an important speech before the Disarmament Commission of the United Nations. In that speech, you cited scientific warnings about the radiation accumulating in the world from the nuclear tests, which could cause a great deal of damage to all nations, not just to those who might become enemies eventually. Now, you also proposed that there be direct negotiations between the United States and Russia on stopping the tests and perhaps making some kind of a step toward dismantling a bomb or two as a symbol. Have you had any enthusiastic reaction at all to this proposal of yours?
Well, I'm interested to hear you say that I had made these proposals. I don't know how you found it out. You could not have found it out by reading the papers.
I read the United Nations
text. Yes. You're a student of politics. It is quite true. We made certain proposals. There isn't the time. I'm looking at Mr. Brooks's watch. There isn't the time to go into the whole of it. We have made these proposals. We have made certain general proposals 2 years ago. And the assembly asked the committee to consider it. They didn't consider it. They came back last year, and the assembly took a strong view about it, then to incorporate in the resolutions a consideration. Then we reminded them that these things ought to be considered. So we were invited to be present, and we made these proposals. First of all, that the explosions should be suspended, and we gave 5 or 6 or 7 reasons. I haven't time to recapitulate them. We suggested that as a token, publicly, both sides, that is, the Soviet Union and the United States, could dismantle maybe one or two of these bombs if necessary and reap and take the fuel for industrial purposes. We said that the budget should be revealed and the information should be internationally held. And we made the suggestion that disarmament committee, disarmament negotiation should undergo certain changes which may appear contradictory. On the one hand, there should be direct talks between the Soviet Union and the United States, because the United States and Soviet Union are really the parties concerned. On the other hand, the committee, which was originally our proposal in 1954, should not has developed in a way where it's just two camps, and it should be more representative of the world as it is. I made some other proposals. All these proposals were made with a view to be able to doing something that was immediately possible without getting lost in controlled machinery.
Mr. Hines.
Mr. Krishnamenon, a moment ago in answer to Mr. Spivak's question about Poland, you stated that Poland was an independent nation capable of carrying on its own foreign relations, or it wouldn't be a member of the UN. Is that substantially what you said?
That's one of the things I said.
Yes. Belorussia and Ukraine are also members of the UN. Are they two independent nations capable of carrying on their own foreign relations?
So the United States seems to have recognized when they came in into the United Nations.
That I'm asking you the situation as it exists now. Are they?
That the situation is exactly the same as it was in 45.
From a purely legalistic standpoint, perhaps, but from an actual standpoint?
The standpoint today is the same as it was when they were admitted.
You think that the Ukraine is as independent and capable of carrying on its own
That's
foreign relations as India?
That is what you said.
Well, what do you say?
If you're going to have this trapping kind of conversation, I'm much better at it than you are. I'm trying to give information.
Well, then try it. But
What about the Ukraine? I think I've better things to do.
All right.
Now, the Belorussia and Ukraine and the other countries came into the United Nations when these discussions went on in San Francisco. And it was realized, I suppose, by the founders at that time, even not a free country, that this constituted a better arrangement for the representation of the world. Obviously, their position is different from that of the other countries. But these other countries are there in their sovereign rights. And no country would be admitted to the United Nations unless they were sovereign and independent.
Mr. Smith, we're running short of time.
I want to come back to my original question, which Mr. Krishnamenon did not answer. Why does India oppose a free plebiscite sponsored by the United Nations in Kashmir? It's been opposed now ever since the issue came up, and Mr. Krishnamenon said they have invaded our territory. Well, the point of the plebiscite is whose territory is it?
Oh, no. You don't have plebiscite in Alaska. You don't have plebiscite in Texas. You fought a war to prevent people having a plebiscite.
And you fought a war in Kashmir, too.
Why not? It was our territory they invaded. You fought
a plebiscite.
You Americans who fought the war in order to keep your territories in the Union have no right to tell other people that you are not right to maintain our integrity. Now you come to this plebiscite. I object to this misrepresentation of facts in this way. Now, what did we say about the plebiscite? When, as a part of mediation, we entered an agreement, there were three parts of the agreement. One was the ceasefire, the voluntary on our part. We were an advancing army. For the sake of peace, we did that. Secondly, they were to conclude a truce. And after the truce, during the truce, certain things had to be done, namely disbanding and disarming of the whole of the troops. No administration of that territory. The return of refugees. Withdrawal of the aggression. That is the second stage.
I'm very sorry that I'm going to have to interrupt, but I see that our time is up.
That is the second stage. The third stage of the consideration, that's 9 years ago. Now, I don't propose to answer this question more fully because
I'm
if Pakistan goes
to
the Security
to
Council...
to stop because our time is up. Thank you very much for being with us. Here is our announcer.
For the happiest vacation under the sun, wise birds fly Pan-American.
Wise birds fly Pan-American, down to visit by the Caribbean.
Anywhere you choose to go, a calling, Pan-American can do the hauling. Pan-American has increased flights, flying in the days and flying in the nights.
Wise birds fly Pan-American, down to visit by the Caribbean.
Take the gay way to the Caribbean. Pan-American's first-class circle trip to Puerto Rico, the Dominican Republic, Haiti, Jamaica, Cuba. Thanks to Pan Am's Pay Later plan, you can go right now for less than $30 down plus tax from the East Coast. Call your travel agent or Pan American, world's most experienced airline.
Pan-American, wise birds fly Pan-American.
Goodbye from Mr. V.K. Krishnamenon and Meet the Press. Next week, Meet the Press will be brought to you by Johns Manville, manufacturers of asbestos products for home and industry, Our guest will be Senator Warren Magnuson, Democrat from the state of Washington, who was to have appeared this week. Meet the Press came to you from New York.